Foreign Madam and the White Yogi, a verse novel by Chris Mooney Singh, Episode 11. In this installment, Yogi, Margot and the girls arrive in New Delhi, India. The flights are on the tarmacs. The hostesses are in their saris. The namastes are in the palms. The sea of heads is in the halls. The chewing hours are in the queues. The ennui is sour in the armpits. The bags are returning on the belts. The beckoning is in the fingers. The official chop is in the passports. The airport is halfway between the lokas. The steel corrals channel the herds. The sharks swim in the taxi hordes. Inside is comfort. Outside is chaos. It was the brown hand war of grasping that squashed them all together, a clinging clan, wheeling luggage, arms and legs, one gangly mantis attacked by taxi ants. The girls held hard to Yogi now, and not to Margot, who was trolley-bound. He felt at last a father's use, guiding his brood on through the seething mob. A random theory cabman grabbed their bulging bags, assuming ownership by wheeling fast toward a van waiting in the car park, where the driver was primed to load before confusion set things straight. A car key parking cop, now coming over, was headed off by grubby money in the palm. Then they were in and off down airport road, dodging bony rumps of Brahmin cows. A hotel's name on a slip of paper, and a nodding driver meant nothing at all at midnight as the jet-lagged four bumped on the bench seats, shooting south through ring road fog. The driver, chewing on betel nut, glared red-eyed through the windscreen grime while dodging trucks, auto rickshaws, taxis, cars. Overtaking, slid on oil, the brakes a squealing animal. Margot and the girls were stunned, speechless. They had now forgotten the Paris flight, 3 airport hours, their bodies bouncy shock absorbers. The van coughed into Lodi Lodge, fluorescent lit behind some trees. "Where's Mega Inn?" the yogi asked. The driver played deaf and dumb, then jumped, unloaded baggage, went inside and came back folding secrets into a pocket, found his tongue and jetted the ground with betel juice. ₹950, sahib?" Yogi bargained down to 8. Still too much. The place was wrong, but he was stuck inside a scam. A wife and 2 girls on his hands, lost and beaten this first night in India. A smudged half moon hung there like a cup tipped over. Yogi breathed. The smog was fog. Another night again, another room, where burdened bags were dumped, a case unzipped, like open heart surgery in progress. A clothing trail led to the double bed where they had slept. Now they had woken up to stuffy air and grit in the carpet pile that discouraged going here and there barefoot. Yet each had showered underneath a nozzle with a yellowish stain growing like a map of South America dripping down the tiles. They had ordered the continental breakfast, meaning warmed-up buttered bread called toast. Margot packed while Yogi paid the bill. There was too much scam to stay on here also. A black and yellow cab went to the city. "Mum, where are we going now?" demanded Paul. 2 daughters' futures, to be fair, was what the journey was about. Yet often they would whine and pout while meeting kin from here and there. They did not understand this place, the urchin beggars that they pass in rotting shirts beyond the glass, afar from Barbie dolls in lace. The driver shook a cursing hand at trucks and cars. The girls felt fear. "Mum, why did you bring us here?" How could she make them understand? At last they found the mega inn and settled for a budget suite. Now they must find somewhere to eat, with picky girls, where to begin. But then he saw it. Temptation lured him into a bookshop, also an incense cave. She saw the agrabati racks and stocked up big on her favourite scent, Nag Champa, a giant wad of packets for the village. Down the stairs were basement stacks, old books, new books, practical, metaphysical, grey paper, thick inked, all were local knockoffs that hadn't heard the cry of copyright. Who owns ideas, thought Margot. Tell the gods how the West now sells them back to sender, publishers, rejects dumped on in India like Birmingham milled ready-made shirts and pants imposed on them during the British Raj. Here, rows and rows of pirated bestsellers, dog-eared, badly stitched with ugly glue, were cheap and nasty. Yogi chose most philosophy, history, Swami stories, a penguin, Sanskrit poet second-hand. Look, an illustrated Mahabharata for kids. She liked this one and claimed it for her school, then found a Hindi grammar and dictionary to English, plus the primers an ESL buff gets hot for. It was quite a haul of loot, well worth its pirate weight, to while away village hours. But the girls were getting bored. Mummy. Naturally, they whined on. Mum, we're hungry. Batter squirted, flipped, flapped, and scooped onto racks. Hot plates of epic work ethic, boiling craters of oil, click. Doses, samosas, kachoris, pakoras, halvas, jalebis. Round, round, stop, try one hot mem sahib, click. Follow and chase after the peanut mountain pushcart. Pyramids of oranges, apples and guavas spiked with salt, click. Try a green coconut, lobotomized, suck on a straw. Corn cobs roasted on coals, rained upon by lime juice, click. Anyone could drink the purple pomegranate's blood, share a gold-green mango blushing like a virgin. Instead, the girls light up. Look, there's a McDonald's! But the double Big Macs were McVeggie inside. Click, click. The girls ate now from hunger. They bit. It was a burger, but the taste was soggy, stranger. Coke drunk, the girls were set to brave the street, then fit in an auto rickshaw, tight and bumpy on adult laps. A sightseeing day, strange trips, the lawnmower engine creeps ahead of scooters, carts, from laneways, margs where the meter's in love with roundabouts. They stopped at Birla Mandir, the Vishnu Lakshmi mansion where deities hang out. White marble and red sandstone, and higher flights of stairs to a sky world of towers. Two adults and two girls joined the masses climbing. An over-friendly crone pounced out from the archway, dragging them off to halls with her tour guide patter. Inside, the deities were silked and spangled, huge, marble boned with gold. Vishnu and consort, Lakshmi, Krishna on a flute, Ganesha, Hanuman. The girls had met the monkey and elephant man on walls of Mummy's room at home. Before, there were more cartoon like Mickey or Yogi Bear. The girls now stepped with care as devotees now offered fruit and flower garlands and others bowed full-bodied to the marble inlay floor in front of the silken beings in royal pantheon halls. The crone wheedled money.
Ring the bell, sahib. Wake up the gods to bless you.
Monoxide mixes with incense. They're migrating back in time. the cold chill in the rickshaw. Nothing insulates truth. Soon they will be parting, yet still there are some potholes. A rattling back to the past. What can the girls gain here? They're on the goodbye road, shedding each other, that's all. Rickshaw blowing smoke, the darkening sky sent them to shop for gifts and trinkets back at the bazaars. Boxes, silks, lacquer dolls, puzzles, ornaments, candles, brass, rings and pouches, leather, sacks of beads. The girls are overloaded, needing nothing from thin lanes of shoebox bangle stalls that haggle, waggle and wrangle. Margaret bundled brooches, clips and rainbow strings, and step-sibling things in wood, and the must-give daddy box. Enough, they wove their way back to the mega-inn, while he made sandwiches, she set them down for the talk. The time had come, and she was dreading it. "Mom has to send you back, you understand?" Of course they did, but weren't the slightest bit prepared for such a parting as she'd planned.
"Mummy, no!"
Pauline began to whine like a siren whining higher in an air raid. Then fear and love began to intertwine as Adele joined in the misery serenade.
"Don't worry, kittens. Christmas I'll be back."
Margot sold again her year-off plan, but panic choked the felines in their sack of desperation. They whimpered on the divan. She hugged them hard.
"You think I'd leave you? Never!"
But Christmas sounded far away as ever. Margaret slept and dreamt toward their continent. Her house is standing there and she is working soil. The frosty mornings come with hillside fog. Soon she will be getting ready for the planting. The rich soil between the railway sleepers, put down here as borders for the garden, is free of couch grass and full of worms. Yes, she has laboured hard and raised a sweat. Desire and will have played their double role. The patch is nearly ready, and she is glad. All this goes according to some plan, not contrived but merely known on waking from a calm sleep earlier this morning. She is not aware what is to happen, what the future holds for her children, whether they can make their steady way and get well settled. Will they arrive at the strange and distant country called contentment? Can this feeling last throughout this marriage? She only knows the truth of daily effort. It is pure faith. She works the chocolate soil, not separate from any worm below, or the raw sound of next year's turned-up rock song, or the jet trail slicing through the blue sky. Her steel blade cuts and trowels a path, her face focused far beyond its thinking. The crisp wind tries to grab her full attention, shaking and whistling through the lemon tree. Goldfinches spar around in the aviary. A skink appears on a railway sleeper like a brief question mark and then is gone. Nothing can distract her from the task that has been all assigned to her this morning. She fears no failure or a coming death. Her mind is kneeling down upon the earth, utterly given up to the planting of snow peas. Yogi's hand was waking her. It's time. She jumped up with a start, then shook herself, as if fitting back her soul into the body. It's late. We overslept. We have to hurry, Yogi said, already shaking Paul, and Margot observing herself as if another person was rising from the dead. Adele had woken.
Mummy!
She reached out and tried a hug. A groggy Margot now went through the motions, getting Adele and Pauline to move forward while Yogi madly snatched clothes from the closet. We have to get them to the airport fast. They'll miss their flight. Margot knew this day was coming, but didn't need the Yogi to remind her to do this irksome duty. Now they all must rush and beat the clock to get the girls both showered, dressed and packed. Margot had to be the bathroom matron, and Yogi, feeling overlooked, demoted, resumed his role as valet with the bags. Soon they were ready. The yawning girls in coats had tired eyes wrinkled up like dried raisins. "Come on, let's go." They followed her like ghosts straight out of the door, drifting into the lift. Downstairs, a hotel cabbie was on call, like a hunting dog now whistled into action. Luggage stored, soon they were heading out toward the Indira Gandhi Airport. "Hurry up, please, we're late." Yogi went in front.
"Don't worry, madam, flights are later always."
But he does accelerate and passes cars, shifting gears and zooming through the holes in aisles of traffic. Margot and the girls close scared eyes, but Yogi looks ahead, measuring his pulse rate by his watch. Eventually they reach. He pays the driver. Yogi grabs the baggage from the boot. Margaret herds her girls, flashing passports. Inside, the check-in counter is ghostly empty. The flight is full and ready. The tickets checked and baggage weighed, sent on down the belt. They make a dash up escalators toward the boarding gate. It's there, the final point of separation. There is no time except to hug and say, "Oh, Mummy, Mummy!" No word comes out except, "My beautiful girls."
"It is time, madam. Children, come this way," says the sari hostess. "The plane is ready."
Thus Margot sent them, one from either hand, through the departure doors, and they were gone.
Tired and wired, too taxied to wear, she kept on seeing swing door departure. She hugged, then recoiled in the hell of turmoil. Kids were a cradle, though life had uncoupled. She gulped oxygen. He patted her forehead. Losing blood young, their regrets had doubled. Tear ducts denied all was just chipper. Flopping, she blubbered in their hotel hideout. How well had she chosen? He offered himself. She hugged, she kissed, they sweated, they sank. The sleep drug came, block out, black out, till dawn's horn honked, till the dream shop closed. Sun branding eyeballs, suffering came early. Her heart misfired. He brooded beside her. She craved direction. He said, "I am with you." Checking in and out at the Aid Abroad office, guilt second-guessing, they decamped New Delhi, took a train and a bus for school days in a village to smother her worries by the mother of rivers.
Been listening to Foreign Madam and the White Yogi, a verse novel by Chris Mooney Singh. Join me next week for another installment.